Hey, listen, are you thinking about buying tickets to your favorite sports, concert, or theater event? Maybe you want to experience a basketball game courtside rather than on your couch. Maybe you go to a hockey game and you bang on the glass instead of your own TV in your own living room. Then head on over to FanExchange.com for a safe, easy, and reliable experience. Tickets purchased on FanExchange are always guaranteed. There's no getting to the gate and worrying about getting in. So whether it's NBA, Major League Baseball, WrestleMania, Coachella, maybe a Broadway musical, FanExchange will get you closer to the action. Find the very best seats at the best prices at FanExchange.com. Use the promo code Rome, and you'll get 50% off the service fees on your next purchase. Fan Exchange. We have tickets. That's Fan Exchange. All right, setting up for a nice third hour. Welcome back, or good afternoon, good morning, wherever you are. I am Jim Rome. Nice to have you here. All right, third hour sets up like this. I should remind you, I'm broadcasting from the Quicken Loan Studios in Southern California. Quicken Loans, apply simply, understand fully, and mortgage confidently. I've got Jarvis Landry, wide receiver for the Browns, coming up next segment. Telephone number is toll-free. Hit me on Twitter, shoot me an email. But right now, I'm joined by my next guest. I want to talk some basketball with him, and also we're going to talk some running. He is a senior writer at SB Nation. He is a runner, a long-distance runner, an ultra-marathoner. Lots of ground to cover with Paul Flannery. Paul, it is so good to have you back. How are things, Paul?
Oh, Jim, thanks so much for having me. It's great.
Great to have you. All right, so let me start with this. I had Neil Olshey on the show yesterday. We talked a little bit about your great piece on the relationship between Damian Lillard and the city of Portland. What do you think it is about that dynamic that makes that work so well as a marriage between a player and a city?
You know, I think a couple of things. I think Damian, number one, really thought it was important wherever he went. If he was in Milwaukee, if he was in New York, if he was in Chicago, he would be trying to make the same inroads in the community that he does in Portland, and just the kind of person he is. He is a natural leader. But the city of Portland, as an NBA city, just loves what he does. It's a perfect marriage between the two of them because, as he says, you know, we're both low maintenance. We're not looking for attention. We're not looking for spotlight. We just want to help people. And, you know, he's a real authentic person, and Portland is a real authentic place, and they've just connected.
All right, then. Paul Flannery joining us. Let me also ask you about the Celtics. Now, they're up 1-0 in their series, but without Kyrie Irving and Gordon Hayward, there's a sense that they've got a ceiling on what they can realistically do this year. That said, how valuable are these playoffs for their younger guys, and how good can this team be when Irving and Hayward do return?
It's huge for him, Jim. And, you know, people here don't really want to hear about it, but from the moment Gordon Hayward got hurt, everyone in the Celtics was whispering, you know, look, this season is about getting Jason Tatum experience and Jaylen Brown experience. That's what this year is all about. Of course we're going to try to compete. And then all those guys started getting hurt, and he said, okay, this is really about getting those guys these reps and this experience. So, you know, it's not a win-win. It's unfortunate. There's only so many years you have to compete with your best players, but you know, from the standpoint of what can we make out of this, they've done a really nice job. I don't know how far it's going to take them. They might lose this series against Milwaukee. They could get to the conference finals. I don't really know what to put on them right now. Clearly, this is not a championship team.
Paul Flannery joining us. All right, then, let me change up on you. Yesterday was the Boston Marathon, and we have talked distance running in the past, but I want to talk to you about serious distance running. You ran a 50K ultra marathon over the weekend. Before I ask you how the race itself went, what possessed you to do that, Paul?
Because it was there. But, you know, I think running the Boston Marathon last year was a weird experience for me, and when I got done with it, I wasn't quite sure what it was I needed to do next as a runner. And the trails were open. I'd never really explored them. And once I did, I just found it was for me. And so, you know, I thought it would be kind of poetic to do one on the same weekend as the Boston Marathon. It's this little event near where I live, and it's called Don't Run Boston. And, you know, it was an unmarked course with no spectators, and I thought, why not?
All right, so it was unmarked, and then on Sunday you tweeted, I got lost, ran an extra 2 miles, and gashed my ankle on a rock, but I ran a bleeping ultra. Let's get into the details now. You laid out where the run was, but what are we talking about in terms of elevation changes, and then how was the run?
Okay, so I'm so glad we're talking about this, Jim, because I can talk about this all day.
Good.
It's 5,000 feet of elevation, and to give people some perspective, the Boston Marathon itself is 500 feet. And that's pretty much all contained within Heartbreak Hill and the couple of hills that lead up to Heartbreak. So this was 5,000 feet. This is like going up Heartbreak Hill 10 times. And it was on rocky, a lot of rock, a lot of scrambling, a lot of hands and knees going up and also coming down, which is really the hard part. And then, you know, it's in it just sort of loops around and loops back upon itself in a number of places. And it's the one of the features of it is that this map is a little bit insane, and it's an unmarked course.
It sounds pretty horrible to me, actually, Paul, because I got to be straight, man. The elevation, the rocky terrain, the fact that it's unmarked, I'm going to get lost no matter what. So when you're in the middle of something like that, say you do get lost, say you have to run an extra 2 miles, say you're bleeding from your ankle, what is your mind doing? I mean, at that point, is it as much a mental and psychological battle as it is a physical battle?
Oh, 100%. 100%. I knew I was finishing it. You know, physically, I knew I could do the distance. But so it was mile 22. I lost touch with my pack, who knew where they were going. So at that moment, I said, this is the one place I don't want to lose them. And of course I did. And of course I went in the wrong direction, and almost wound up back on the highway somehow, and had to kind of retrace, regather myself, and then just say, okay, look, you have a map with you. You know where you are, basically. Get back to the point. I had to ask a hiker to get back on track. And at some point I did, and I realized that I'd probably put in an extra mile, mile and a half, maybe even 2 miles onto it, and that's just the way it was going to be. So, you know, I did the last 5 miles with another runner, and we just made a pact that we were going to get each other across the finish line, and we did.
Paul Flannery joins us. You know, Paul, in his book, When I Talk About Running, Haruki Murakami, the novelist, writes about an ultra he ran in, and at a certain point he said every part of his body hurt, and then it all stopped hurting, and that he couldn't feel anything at all. Did you ever have a moment like that?
No, I didn't, fortunately. Right. I know what he's getting at, but I didn't. Didn't have any out-of-body experiences, but we did finish in a sleep storm. So I was, which made me very happy that we did not get sleep in the earlier portion of the race and that we only had to do the last mile in that. I felt every single thing that you could possibly feel on that, hurt, pain, you know, and also joy and jubilation at the finish. So it was pretty much a great day, man.
All right, so for those who don't know, how far is an ultra marathon? And then how does your body feel after you run one in the hours after and even the days after?
So, yeah, 50K is 31 miles, not 32 and a half or 32.7, which I wound up doing. And then they go up. There's a 50-milers, there's 100-milers, there's 200-milers. There's one that go all the way up to 240, which are way beyond my comprehension at this point. And, you know, I mean, my body felt worked, but, I took a little walk today. I feel pretty fine today. So, yeah, I should be back in Adam by next weekend.
Good. So you got a piece up right now on SBNation.com about Avery Collins. He's an elite distance runner, and you talk about how cannabis is fueling him. Lay it out for me. Exactly who is he?
Right. So Avery Collins is, you know, he's an ultra runner. He's a little new on the scene. He had a big, big year this past year. Won a bunch of big races, and he's been pretty outspoken about his reliance on cannabis as something that helps him in training and also something that's a part of his lifestyle. So I went out to Colorado in late August and met him, and he took me on a run. We went on a run together, and I just sort of got into his mind a little bit. He's an interesting guy. He is a tremendous athlete and a tremendous runner, but he is one of the most mentally strong people I've ever met. And in the piece, I lay out my experience with it and found that the cannabis actually helped my mental mindset deal with, you know, pain and fatigue and frustration and things of that nature. And, you know, I mean, I consider it a tool in the runner toolbox for me. It's not the most prevalent thing in my life, but it's something that has helped.
All right, so what about him? Is that how he uses it? How does he incorporate cannabis into his training?
Yeah, so he uses it a little more than I do. And, you know, he uses it before runs, and he uses the topicals, which are anti-inflammatories, quite a bit. He is adamant, and I have no reason to disbelieve him, that he has never done a race high, which is against the rules. He's passed every drug test he's ever taken. And so it's a part of his life for sure. I don't believe it defines him as such.
Paul Flannery joining me. So, Paul, a number of NFL players have talked about how cannabis has been really helpful for them. So what's your sense as to the attitude in the NBA towards it from a player's perspective and from a coach and front office perspective? Where does that stand right now?
Well, I think it's something that a lot of people don't talk about openly. They might whisper about it a little bit. I think it's a conversation that needs to be had. You know, it's a difficult conversation to have in the sense that the laws are very confusing right now. And, you know, as a league, you have to be careful about that. You have to be cognizant about that. They do lay out the testing rules, and players who don't pass tests essentially are not paying attention to the testing rules as part of their job. But, you know, I think that in the future, as we go along, perhaps it can be used, it can be found to have some realistic medicinal value that might help these guys because they put their bodies through a lot. And at some point, I know players, especially in the NFL, have talked about painkillers and pain substitutions and things of that nature. I think it's a conversation worth having, but it needs to be done openly and without the sort of like joking stoner jokes that go along with it.
Right. I mean, what about this, though? I mean, when you look at it, it's certainly there's a change in how it's being treated in a number of states over the past few years. So is there any part of you that thinks that we might not be that far off from it being a banned substance in professional sports leagues, or is that still a long way off?
Yeah, it's interesting because I got into this a little bit in the piece. I'm not sure that it's not a performance enhancer in some regard, as much as it could be a training aid, if that makes sense. I mean, you know, on some level, Advil is a performance enhancer. So you really have to define these terms and define what it is doing for people, because it doesn't just deal with your body; it also deals with your mind, and it's not for everyone. So I'm not sure where this is going to go. I just hope that we're able to have an open dialogue about it without all of our preconceived notions attached to it.
We're talking to Paul Flannery. All right, so next up then, what's the next thing for you? You nailed that 50K ultra marathon. What is the next thing?
Right now, it's getting back into the NBA playoffs. In terms of my running, I think I got my eye on something in October. But I'm going to take a little bit of time off. I'm going to meet Avery out in July, I believe, late July, and crew for him. He's running 100K. In Colorado. He invited me to come out and be part of his crew, which I'm going to try to maybe turn that into a piece. And but not just the NBA playoffs, different kind of grind.
Hey, listen, Paul, one last thing. You mentioned Avery. Avery, when you mentioned Avery, you said this guy is a tremendous athlete. You got a quote, though. He says, "I don't think I'm a superhuman athlete. Quote, I thoroughly believe that I'm gritty as bleep. I could take a punch to the face and fight back the whole way." It's a great quote. How accurate is that?
It's entirely accurate. The stories he was telling me about his racing experience. I mean, he had a knot hanging off his Achilles the size of a golf ball, and he taped it up with duct tape and finished second. He had 36 miles to go. Like, this is one of the toughest people I've ever been around mentally. What's interesting is that if you meet him, he just looks like a normal guy. But when you get up in the mountains and you see how he like dances over rocks and his running form, you're like, okay. So he's selling himself a little bit short in terms of he is a phenomenal athlete. But it's really his mind, and that's what ultra running is really all about. There's talent that goes with it, but it's your mind.
He is a senior writer at SB Nation and an ultra runner. Paul Flannery, my guest. Paul, great conversation. Really nice to get caught up. Thanks so much for doing it.
Hey, thanks for having me, Jim.
That was fun. You got it. Change up on you a little bit. Ultra running reminds me of the conversation I had with David Goggins, another one of the podcasts you want to check out. Jim Rohn Podcast, Kobe Bryant, EP 33. It's out right now. And we're looking ahead to number 34. Looking ahead to the next segment, Cleveland Browns wide receiver Jarvis Landry is scheduled to join us. That's coming up next. Don't go anywhere. Now, I know there's a lot of you out there that had a bad night. I can tell by your attitude. I can tell by your chippiness. I can tell by your phone calls. Why'd you have a bad night? You didn't sleep enough. Why did you not sleep enough? Because you or somebody close to you is snoring. This is not unusual. What's unusual is you're not doing anything about it when I've got the ready-made solution, the revolutionary Zipa. Zipa is a game changer. If you snore, you're not sleeping. Again, if you're not sleeping, you're not succeeding. You got to rest and recover. If you want success, you've got to be at your very best. Zipa is the solution. Zipa, the only snoring solution of its kind. If you snore, you need to get one. If you know somebody who snores, you need to get that person one. Go to ZYPPAH.com. Very easy to remember. Zipa is happy Z spelled backwards. Go to Zipa.com right now. Get one. Tell everybody you know who snores to get one. Remember, ZYPPAH. ZYPPAH. Zipa. Get the sleep that you need and you deserve. Make it a great night with a Zipa.
You're listening to the Jim Rome Show.
Welcome back. Grinding out this Tuesday. I'm Jim Rome. I'm live in Southern California. And right now, we are talking Cleveland Browns football. And I'm pumped to do it. We're joined by a wide receiver for the Browns, a three-time Pro Bowler. He led the NFL with 112 receptions last season, 400 receptions in his first four seasons, the most in NFL history. He signed a five-year contract extension with the Browns last week. He was the 63rd pick overall in 2014 out of LSU. My guest is Jarvis Landry. Jarvis, really nice to have you on the program. How are you?
I'm doing wonderful. How you doing?
Good, bud. Good. Listen, you were in the building yesterday for the first time or the first day of team meetings and everything else. How was that experience, and what's it been like being a member of the Browns so far?
Man, it's amazing. You know, just the appreciation here, you know, from, you know, the coaches to Mr. Dorsey himself, to D, Jimmy, Haslam, the owners, you know, just their appreciation. And obviously for me, man, just getting back around football again, you know, it's been exciting to see the guys and be in the building and working out together with everybody. So it's fun.
Hey Jarvis, it seems like, and it sounds like you've been there much longer than you have, but you really haven't been there that long at all. You're not just a member of that team, but since you came over from Miami, you've already become one of the faces of that franchise. So what's that mean to you, and then how are you approaching that responsibility?
You know, it means everything, you know, and it's part of the commitment that, you know, I made to the Browns and the Browns made to me, you know. And for me, man, the responsibility is just lead these guys in the way that I know how to lead, you know, by example, and put games together, you know, be everything that I can be to make sure that happens. You know, I think that that's the biggest responsibility that has been put on my shoulders.
So what about the vibe of the team itself? You know, there hasn't been success there lately, but you know you've got guys who badly want to win. You're already trying to lead from the front in the sense that you're trying to get your new teammates to come down to Miami and work out with you as much as possible. How would you describe the vibe around the team and the guys you've talked to so far? How do they feel about the potential for this team?
It's a lot of excitement. It's a lot of excitement. You know, and there's a lot of new guys in the building, me being one of them. But I'll say that just the energy, just the morale of the guys that have played in Cleveland for a while, or was a part of the team last year, you know, just the morale of those guys, the spirit, knowing that, you know, the organization is doing everything that they can possibly to make sure that we have a chance to contend, you know, for the North and also for a championship. So, you know, the spirits are really high right now.
Jarvis Landry joining us. You talk about contending for the division, even a championship. So, like, what's your time frame? As an example, you come in there, Tyrod Taylor comes in, you've got some draft picks coming as well. How much urgency is there to get this thing turned around and fast?
I mean, you look at it, Jim. Just looking at how Mr. Dorsey and Dee and Jimmy and everybody part of the Cleveland organization, how, you know, the moves that have been made, you know, and also then having the first and fourth pick, you know, the mentality and attitude is just to win now, you know, and I think we're gaining all the pieces and putting all the things together that we need to do to ensure that we can be contenders, competitors in our division and around the league.
I'll tell you what, Jarvis, when you say to me, you look at it, Jim, and you tell me, I'll tell you what I see. I see an offense that's got a guy in Tyrod Taylor who I think was underappreciated. I see a guy in Josh Gordon who's got the upside to be one of the best ever. I see Carlos Hyde. I see you coming in. How explosive does that offense feel to you, and what's its upside?
Again, it's exciting. You know, signing Josh back, having Corey Coleman. You know, you mentioned guys like Tyrod Taylor, Carlos Hyde, you know, David Njoku, you could throw in that mix as well, who had a phenomenal rookie campaign for a tight end. And it's just something, again, that the Cleveland Brown organization is creating the whole atmosphere, the whole environment to win now. You know, and it could be that much more special when we put these draft picks together and bring these guys in to make a change, to make a difference, and bring the culture back to Cleveland where it belongs.
Jarvis Landry, my guest. You know, it all seems kind of natural when you look at your college career, big-time college career. You come into the NFL and you do something that's never been done before. But if you go way back, you're from Convent, Louisiana. Jarvis, a town of less than 1,000 people. I could argue the fact that you and I, even having this conversation, given where you came from, is absolutely amazing. When we spoke a couple of years back, we talked about your mother and the sacrifices that she made working long shifts every single day. As you've approached your NFL career and you understand the work that's gone into getting to where you are right now, do you find that you appreciate what she did even more now than you did back then?
Oh, man, so much. You know, so much. And, you know, I credit a lot of my life and a lot of the things that I've had success in to her. You know, I remember all the sacrifices, you know, and all the things that she showed me, like work ethic. And sacrifice and all these things that she didn't have to explain to me what it was. You know, as I grew up and I'm just starting to understand all the things that she did for our family, all the things that she did for me, my brother, to make sure that we had, to make sure that we would absolutely be in a, put in a position to have a future, you know. And that was part of this deal, man. It was that was so emotional for me, you know, signing that contract and having her here with me was just so emotional because, you know, it wasn't just for me, you know. It was definitely for that woman and my mom, who was the love of my life.
Jarvis Landry, that's great. I mean, I wonder on some level, what's more important? What means more to you, the fact that you are living your dream and realizing your dreams, or the fact that you're able now to take care of your family, something that you set out to do from the very beginning?
You know what, man? I feel like it all. I've only had two dreams for so long, and that was taking care of my family and playing football, you know, and I think I'm able to do that now. So it's a blessing. I can't thank nobody but God, man.
Jarvis, a couple of things before you go. You mentioned your brother Gerard. What about the role he played in your development as a football player and a person? How influential was he?
Man, just being my idol, just being my mentor, just being an ear if I needed to bounce things off of, giving me advice. You know, I've always looked up to my brother. He's 7 years older than me, and even in the beginning, you know, I've always wanted to walk like him, talk like him, be just like him, you know, and he's taught me mostly everything that I know, you know, and he's still in my corner to this day, helping me out, you know, as a big brother should. You know, he's been a father figure. He's been more things to me than I could even imagine or even speak about. And again, man, I'm just so grateful to have great people around me, great family around me. It means everything.
Dude, you called your mother the love of your life and your brother your idol. Man, I'm getting really moved up in the studio. I got one more thing I want to ask you about. You take a step away from the field for a moment, and you hosted the Jarvis Jam last month in Miami. It raised more than $100,000 for the Cystic Fibrosis Foundation. I know it's a cause very close to your heart. It's one that you've represented on your cleats even in the past. It goes back to a close friend of yours, Maya Zimmer. Who was she? What was she like?
She's a beautiful human being. And I'm smiling now just thinking about her and talking about her. Just, you know, our relationship, the things that, you know, we went through, and just even being a kid back then, you know, being a kid back then, and all the things that she's done for my life, you know. And one of the promises that I've made to her, was, you know, to always support that cause, to always support cystic fibrosis, to always continue to raise awareness. And the night I got traded was actually the night that that I had the event. And, you know, as emotional as it was for me, you know, I didn't even think twice about not going or feeling embarrassed or feeling ashamed or anything, because I just got traded from a team that I got drafted to. You know, it was her night, you know, and I will remember the day that, you know, I got traded, quote unquote, as the night that I celebrated life, the night that I brought more awareness to a cause that that struck a family, you know, that struck my family, that strikes many families around the world, you know. And I always remember that night as that.
She passed away in 2015, and you continue to honor her and her family by raising money to support others who are dealing with cystic fibrosis as well. The future is extremely bright in Cleveland. A three-time Pro Bowler, led the NFL with 112 receptions last season. Jarvis Landry, my guest. Jarvis, great to get caught up. Really nice conversation. Great to have you back on the program. Hope we can do it again soon.
Thanks, Jim. See you soon.
Nice talking to you, Jarvis. Jarvis Landry. Man, the future is bright. Browns put it together. They've got draft picks. They've got firepower offensively. And most of all, they've got hope. They've got a plan, and they've got hope. I don't know about you, but when you've got a young guy like that who comes on, who's just killing it and says, I've got two dreams, to be as good a football player as I possibly can and take care of my family. My mother is the love of my life, and my brother is my idol. I mean, don't y'all want a family like that? That's amazing. Incredible. Jarvis Landry, C-Town's hyped on that. And I love also that he's been there a week, a little longer, and already establishing himself. And as I mentioned, leading from the front, trying to get guys to work out with him in Miami and already establishing himself in that facility. All right, last segment. When we return, Giancarlo Stanton needs some advice, I think. I've got it for him. I think I've got the answer, at least on some level, to what ails him. And again, he's always going to be this guy. He's going to get really hot. and then Yankee fans are going to forget about everything they're saying about him right now, and then he's going to slump again, and then they're going to bring it all back. This is what it is when you sign a guy like this. This is what you have to live with. But in the meantime, like mechanically, I would never offer up any advice, but I think I've got some advice on the hope front that he could benefit from. That's coming up in a minute. Also, this segment brought to you by O'Reilly Auto Parts. For all of your car care needs, get guaranteed low prices and excellent customer service at O'Reilly Auto Parts. Better parts, better prices every single day. Here is your bottom of the hour sports update. Jarvis Landry hitting huge. Great reaction to the conversation. At Willie Beeman One tweets, Jarvis Landry, what a great guy. That's the kind of culture the Browns need. Great interview snags. At PHX Nola Girl is in. Tracy tweets, it brings me to tears to hear Jarvis Landry talk about his upbringing, his family, and his loyalty to the good fight. Hashtag Louisiana Proud. That's true. I'll say it again. To hear him say that his mother is the love of his life, his brother is his idol, man, that's nice. Got a little choked up in here. Neil in the 719 tweets, I want Jarvis Landry on my team. This guy's a rock. He is. Great acquisition. And then back to the topic about that foursome in Australia, where one guy started to deface the green with the flag stick. The other guy said, come on, bro. Grow up, man. Knock it off. So he went back to his car, got a knife, and stabbed his boy in the thigh. Pretty reasonable response, right? Jimmo. If that Australian foursome was like the typical foursome, you know, even as that guy was swinging and stabbing, there was one dude in the group sitting in a car telling him what was wrong with his swing and stab and gave him a couple of drills on how he could fix it. Tony in Albuquerque. No, man. Like this. Every foursome's got one. No, man, that's not how you stab. Stab like this, straight down, not at an angle. Keep your head down when you stab. That's an inverted stab right there. That is an inverted stab. Keep your left arm straight. Loosen your grip on the knife. Follow through to the target. Keep your head down. San Antonio in Albuquerque, War Tiger stabbing somebody on the course, and all the honks still saying that it's a sign of improvement.
Tiger!
Jim, did the group behind Sling Blade get to play through? Mike in Sugarland, Texas. I'm sure they did. I'm sure as the guy was bleeding out, he's like, come on, man, just, you guys can play through. I'll be dead in 5 minutes anyway. Go ahead. Hey, can you put the pin back in, please? Come on, man. Fix your divots. Fix that gaping hole in my leg. This guy wars lady clones and car nappers. Unwar OJ taking cuts off the tee. Come on, Mike. I'm looking at your title here. You got a pretty important title to be sending me emails like that. He's an outreach athletic trainer working at a sports medicine institute. And you're sending me things like that. Right, it's pretty amazing. I thought it was pretty amazing yesterday when he called, because generally the two-time defending champ does not call that often outside the smack-off. So in and of itself, that's pretty unusual. Leffen Laguna, the two-time defending smack-off champ, called yesterday, only to have Caleb call today and take a run at him, and now he's back again? Back-to-back calls, 2 days in a row. The only thing more unusual than him winning the smack-off 2 years in a row is him calling the show outside the smack-off 2 days in a row. Yet there he is. Let's go to it. He is the champ, the two-time defending champ, left in Laguna for a second day in a row. Left, brother, what's going on?
Hey, not much. Hold up real quick. My writing team's just, we're finishing up a joke real quick.
I got it.
No, that one's good. I like that one. Yeah, no reason. Hey, Jim, good interview with Brett Brown earlier today. I know it really resonated with Caleb in Green Bay, too, because every time this fat ass goes into the pantry, he trusts the process. Caleb, I like to make my calls in moderation, so feel free to do the same with your calorie consumption. And talking about my calling absence, That's funny, considering the number of times you quit Twitter over cyberbullying. It's now called the Lambo Weep. I get why he's so sensitive, Romy. He was the only kid in high school who had a note from his mom to shower with his clothes on. Caleb, I'd call more if I was like you. You know, no friends, no offspring, no access to sunlight, and if my mom did my laundry and laid it out of my race car bed. Caleb, you're such a dork, even CBS Sports is making fun of you. Spelling your name wrong on TV. Caleb with a C. I'll see you in the smack-off web. Mikey, you're on the clock, bro.
There's your comeback. Great job by his team of writers for that one. Trust the processed. He's in the pantry trusting the processed. All right, so Caleb came in big. So, Alvy, you got something to think about now. It's like a little mini smack-off broke out. Who's going to win the huge call today? Caleb, who came in and got nice, or Lef, who comes in back-to-back, and that time he was not playing. My man was not looking to crack a joke. He was looking to crack a skull. And he said, Mikey, you're next. Mike in Indy is the guy we're talking about. And I've not seen Mikey in a long time. I'm not sure what's up with Mike. The defending two-time champ coming in. 1-800-636-8686. Anybody else want to come in and talk about anything at all? Let's see. I'm looking at my call screen right here. War Lady Clones. Let's go to Fall City. Liz in Fall City. Liz, what's up? How are you?
Hey, Jim. I don't know if I can follow Les eviscerating Caleb in Green Bay. Wow, Les, that was amazing. But I want to talk about the new name we're giving Kawhi Leonard right now. We're calling him Coward Leonard here in San Antonio because we don't want him here anymore. He can't show up for his team. He can't show up for the city. So you know what? Jeff in San Antonio is more of a badass than you are right now in San Antonio, dude. So get out. War Lady Clones, War Left and Laguna winning a third smack off in a row, War Wood Scopes, and I'm out.
Look out. Coward Leonard. Liz, you went there. All right, so does that make him a coward? Does that make him smart, responsible, looking out for his own career? You know, maybe this guy's looking at Isaiah Thomas and saying, for who, for what? I know I'm not right. I don't want to come back if I'm not ready to come back and risk. And by the way, the guy is looking at a max deal, a super max deal. He saw what happened to Isaiah Thomas. Remember Isaiah Thomas talking about how it's going to be time to back up the Brinks truck. Nobody's backing up any Brinks truck for him right now. In fact, my man, because he came back, because he was able to grind out the way he did to make it back when he did, this guy's more like going to an ATM machine and looking at that $300 maximum withdrawal. Brinks truck. If I'm Kawhi Leonard and my body is the one thing that I have, my moneymaker, you know, body as temple, and I know my body better than anybody else, and I know that I'm not right. And I don't know how much of it is the quad. Here's the key to me. How much of it is the quad, and then how much of it is something else that we don't know about between he and the organization? I don't know. I'm not there. But there's something going on. If it's about the quad, and the quad's still not right, and his medical people are saying, if you don't feel right, it's not right, don't come back, then for who? For what? He saw what happened to Isaiah Thomas. How do you not look at Thomas and say, this guy rushed back, and what did that get him? This guy literally gave the Celtics everything he had and wanted to get him. It got him traded. And then it got him traded a second time, and now he's got a bunch of money that he's never going to get back, and he'll probably never be the player that he ever was. Only a year ago, in fact. So I don't know exactly what's going on with Kawhi. I'm not a doctor. I'm not privy to what's going on with his quad, and I certainly haven't talked to him in a long time. I really don't know. But I could see where he might look at a situation like that and say, I'm not right physically. You're not going to rush me back out there because I know you'll be the first ones to break me off. Steve PHX tweets, get in the hole.
Get in the hole!
Signed the judge, sending that golfer to prison. Dude, Steve, you're like in the worst slump imaginable, dude. You're just waving at everything. You're not squaring anything up, dude. I mean, I see you working so hard and getting nowhere. Dude, you're turning that bat into sawdust, man. Lighten up. You're trying way too hard. Try easier, Steve. Try easier.
We're calling him Coward Leonard.
Oh! Liz went there. Come on now. Easy, Liz. Boy, she was hyped up on left, wasn't she? She was ready to give Lef his third title in a row. Oh, Alvy, cold. Liz, he just dropped the crickets blast on you. This email is to Stabby McKay. Dear Stabby McKay, yeah, good show, dude. Was it harder to drain three birdies in one round and miss par, or to drain 3 leaders from one witness and miss the jugular? Inquiringly yours, The Juice.
Hi, good show, dude. My kid Chris was wondering, do you think it was a bigger feat to break 2,000 yards in one season or slice 2 necks in one night?
I'm having a little trouble, Kevin, hearing you.
No, you're not. The question. Answer it. No, this guy's like, he's putting it on his kid, Chris. Like, the guy didn't ask the question. Hey, listen here, Juice. This isn't me. I'm asking for my kid, Chris.
Hi, good show, dude. My kid, Chris, was wondering.
I like the also very personal good show dude to the host. Good show, dude.
Hi, good show, dude.
He did say hi, though. Hi, good show, dude.
Hi, good show, dude.
Hey, Juice, I got something for you. My kid, Chris, has been asking me, what do you think was more difficult, getting 2,000 yards or slicing off 2 domes? I'll take your answer off the air.
Ron and Nicole were physically dead, and it's almost
like Alvy, stop. Eric from the Big Easy writes, wore the Juice trying to figure out McKay, how he got time when his sculpting subject kept his dome. What? Anyway, Sup of Dave in L.A. tweets, damn, Lef and Laguna shut Caleb down. We'll find out. Let's see who wins the huge call. Fake Kellen Winslow tweets, pretty clear that if you mess with Lef and Laguna, he will make you regret it. Caleb learned the hard way. It's kind of hard to argue that point. Like I said, he came in yesterday, cracked a few jokes, let everybody know, hey, look, I'm here. I know what time it is. It's Smackoff season. But then when somebody took a run at him, he came hard like the defending 2-time champ will. Even Hawk said, you know, Hawk being Hawk was like awed by the champ. Like, oh, wow, like a celebrity. Left the celebrities calling. I get to talk to a celebrity. Dude, you didn't ask him for his autograph, did you? Did you ask for a selfie? Hawk's like, damn, Lef, 2 days in a row. And Lef said, yo, it's Smack-Off season. Idiot, Smack-Off season, it's time. Jed in Illinois tweets simply, R.I.P. Walrus, good night now.
Good night now.
Lef is the guy that a lot of you like to hate on, and he's getting a lot of credit now. Didn't go too well for the Walrus. We'll see if he responds. And everybody in that group is still looking for Mike and Indy. Stucknut's in. Stucknut's got his own huge call scorecard. His huge call scorecard. Fourth, Liz. Third, Matt. The runner-up for the day, Caleb. And he's got Lef winning it. That's good, Steve. Of course, it's not your scorecard that matters. It's Alvy's. 303 Automotive is a premium line of protectants and cleaners designed to keep your car looking new and lasting longer. It's available at most auto parts retailers or visit 303radio.com. That's 303radio.com. Alvin, I cannot wait to see who you went with. Who is the huge call today?
It was awful nice of Lef to finally condescend to speak to you. That guy hasn't called in forever. He goes longer in between takes than Stanley Kubrick. Kawhi Leonard thinks that Lef needs to get on the court. And yesterday's offering was barely a couple free throws off the bench. I suppose it's not entirely his fault. I mean, how can we expect his joke writers to bang out a 30-second call in under an hour and give Lef time to practice? Don't worry, champ. I got your back. Types faster, monkeys. Also, Jim, now that the jungle calendar is coming to a close with the Smack-Off on the horizon, I got to say, I'm feeling pretty great about my chances this year. But if I don't win, I have a good idea who will. Jeff Passan. Although he's probably not even listening right now. I bet he's in his laboratory crafting his piping hot takes like, clones don't have jobs. Yeah, revolutionary smack there, Jeff. What about clones like to drink and bake, or clones can't meet women? I mean, why don't you just get us all a body bag next time and save yourself the trouble? Did you finish third in the 2017 Smack-Off or a 1993 episode of Star Search? The only thing that's missing from your punchlines is a hearty Ed McMahon. Hey-oh! I can just picture his call later this year, Jim. He starts off with a bad Johnny Carson impersonation. Well, I just had lunch with Hannibal Lecter. Yes, it was wild. He asked for the check, and they brought out Dominic Hasek. Hey-o! You're a professional writer, for God's sake, pass and act like it. Lastly, Jim, I'm watching the show on TV today. When did you hire Keith Hernandez? I bet Hawk wears those ridiculous shirts to keep the focus away from his dye job. But don't worry, Hawk. It looks so natural, no one can tell. On Wisconsin.
Hi, good show, dude.
Don't at me. Don't at me. I'd love to say that I'm the guy calling the shots, but I'm not. Alvy. At Alvy. At Alvy for going with the walrus. Then again, when I heard it back, you tell from all my guffaws. Dude, that was pretty funny. We'll see about Lev tomorrow. Lev, call again tomorrow. Make it 3 for 3, like your three-peat. Thank you for listening. Jarvis Landry, Paul Flannery, and Brett Brown were my guests. We-